My name is Patricia Kathleen, and this podcast series will contain interviews I conduct with female and female-identified entrepreneurs, founders, co-founders, business owners, and industry gurus. These podcasts speak with women and women-identified individuals across all industries in order to shed light for those just getting into the entrepreneurial game, as well as those deeply embedded within it. Histories, current companies, and lessons learned are explored in the conversations I have with these insightful and talented powerhouses. The series is designed to investigate a female and female-identified perspective in what has largely been a male-dominated industry in the USA to date. I look forward to contributing to the national dialogue about the long overdue change of women in American business arenas, and in particular, entrepreneurial roles. You can contact me via my media company website, wild.agency, that's wilde.agency, or my personal website, patriciakathleen.com. Thanks for listening. Now let's start the conversation. Hi, everyone, and welcome back. This is Patricia Kathleen, and I am sitting down today. I am actually really excited to be talking with Natalie Suzy. A quick bio on Natalie. She is a teacher by heart, a writer by trade, and an entrepreneur by choice. Currently, Natalie combines her educational background as a teacher and her experience as an entrepreneur to provide personal development, coaching, and consulting to individuals, creative entrepreneurs, and businesses. She developed a program called Creating a Conscious Culture that can be utilized in corporate, academic, or personal one-on-one settings to guide people through a process of self-reflection, self-discovery, and self-improvement that raises awareness and consciousness and helps in creating a conscious culture for all. Natalie is also a professor at the University of California, San Diego, where she teaches a course called The Pursuit of Happiness. She also teaches entrepreneur mindset for teens at Soul Charter School. I am so excited to be sitting down with you today. Welcome, Natalie.
Oh, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Wonderful. I should mention that this podcast is taking place virtually. Natalie is on the East Coast, and I am currently sitting in a very warm San Diego.
That's awesome. It's super hot there. It's so hot here. I love a good hot day.
I was going to say, it's probably warmer there.
For sure. Oh, God. East Coast is absurd right now.
Okay. So I want to drop right into, first of all, for all of the audience listening, a quick roadmap of today's interview with Natalie. The general outline will be that we're first going to explore her academic background, then get into her current businesses and titles therein, and ask her some questions following that regarding her current company and projects that she's currently working on or that are on her horizon. Following that, we'll get into some of her goals and scaling that she might have over the next 3 years. And then we will wrap everything up with advice that she has for those of you listening and want to get involved or just glean some of Natalie's wisdom. So I am super excited. Let's drop right into your academic background. Can you tell us if and where you went to university?
Yeah, of course. So I'm an East Coast girl. I'm from Delaware. I was born in Pennsylvania and I was raised in Delaware. And I went to University of Delaware because I never thought I wanted to leave home. So I went like 12 minutes up the street.
Yeah.
And I got my bachelor's degree in English education because I always wanted to be a teacher, like since I was five. Wow. I'm an only child and I had to play school. Like I used to pretend I was a teacher and play school with invisible students from when I was 5 years old. My favorite gift for my birthday to this day is a big blackboard. Like I got a real blackboard and I
thought that's fantastic. Yeah.
At six.
Nice.
Yeah. So that was my most favorite memory of my birthday. And it's 30 years later. I just turned 36 and that's still my favorite memory. So I got my bachelor's in English education and then I actually taught at the high school that I graduated from. I was class president there. I was vice president of the school. I loved the school. It was called Concord High School. And when I left my senior year, I gave out all of my wallet size photos. You know, when you used to do that, when you'd have your wallet size, you probably remember this.
Yeah.
A wallet size printed photo. And on the back of my photos, I gave to all of my favorite teachers, like, I'll see you in 4 years as a faculty member. Because I just knew I wanted to teach there. Yes. And then, you know, 5 days after I graduated, they called me and they were like, are you ready?
So yeah, excellent.
That was my first experience of like, that was my first experience of what I do now with like conscious conversations, conscious reflection, conscious manifesting. That was my first experience of like what it looks like to set in. And I didn't know I was doing it at the time and I didn't have the language for it, but this is my first experience of like setting an intention and creating it and manifesting it, making it into existence.
Right. Okay. And so you went to University of Delaware and got your undergrad. Did you start teaching immediately following that or did you go on to a different school?
Yeah. So I went to University of Delaware and then I went right back to Concord High School and taught there for a year.
Oh, wow. Okay. And then what did you do following that?
So in the middle of that school year of teaching, I woke up one day. It was really strange. I woke up one day and I was just like, this is not big enough for me. This state is not big enough. This life, it's just not enough right now. I need to do something. I need to stretch and challenge myself more. And I was very scared to move, which was why I did it. I was like, oh, I'm really scared to do this. I'm scared to leave my comfort zone and my friends and my family. And maybe I should do it. And so like halfway through the year, I applied to San Diego State. I visited San Diego because I had a friend that lived there. I had one friend that lived there from college. And I visited, I loved it. And I sort of said, it was a very challenging decision for me to make. So I applied to one school that I could afford. And I said, if I get into this school, then I'm meant to go. And that was how I sort of managed decision-making at that point, because it was really challenging. I played with that decision. Like, I talked about it and thought about it for a long time, and I just couldn't like totally get clear on it. Mm-hmm. So I set that sort of parameter up in place. And then it was kind of a funny story because I ended up going back, and the woman who got my application ended up being a woman who wrote a book with the person who wrote my recommendation letter.
Natalie, can we pause for 1 second? I am not seeing audio on yours. Let me pause this really quickly. Will you unplug your headphones and let me see if I get your audio? And now, will you just say something without your headphones plugged into your computer? Are they plugged in right now? Can you hear me?
They are.
I
can hear you.
Okay, if you unplug them and speak.
Is it better? Let me check. Disconnect.
Hi. Does that work?
Yeah, I have my audio and I must have been picking yours up.
Something's gone. We can
It's okay. And I'm going to edit this out. I'm pretty sure I must be yours. It's just showing me my, when you speak into your audio. Okay. So the far left-hand side, do you see a little microphone bottom left of your screen on the Zoom page? Do you see a little microphone that moves when you speak? It should like flash some green in there.
Hi. Yeah.
Okay. So, and then if you plug your headphones back in, if it flashes green for you as well, then we should be fine. I was under the impression that I could see both of our audio, but I'm not in love with Zoom. I'm going to tell you straight. Like, I think that I might be switching to like a different software because it's not like giving me all the control. I'm kind of a sound freak because I do a lot of documentary film work. But so now if you plug those in and say hi, if you see that green mic move,
Hello. Yeah. That should work.
Good. Then we can just keep rolling. We're all good. Sorry about that. I was just like, oh my God, if I don't have sound, I will commit suicide. I've had really good luck with these podcasts. And so I feel like my luck might be running out, but it's not. It's totally fine. I'm master of my domain.
Do you know, before you start, hold on. Before you start again, let me do this one last thing too.
Sure.
I think that I should plug these in with a different, hold on one second.
Okay.
I want to avoid them dying on me because they have this little red button on and I don't know how long. So if I put this other plug in, it should avoid that so we don't get stuck again.
Sure.
Trying to mitigate any more of these little silly things. This is all Mercury in retrograde if you believe in that stuff.
Yeah.
Which I do.
I'm getting into, I just interviewed someone in Sweden. She's a medium and she was a corporate financier and like a big banker. And she'd always had this gift and she finally just left her job. And so I'm having her doing a reading on me. But yeah, I love that stuff. I want to start getting into it because even regardless of what level you buy into it on, like I truly believe in manifestation. I always have since I was a little girl, and being able to like see something for yourself and manifest it is, it's more true to me than the house I'm sitting in. So.
Oh, totally. I love, we could, if you want to talk about any of those things, feel free to bring it up because that's sort of where my life is at right now.
Yeah, I see that you're kind of getting into, well, yeah, I had some questions about later on about human behavior and psychology. You did a bunch of different things about, we'll get into that, overcoming limiting beliefs and ditch moments. There's another person I interviewed about that just quit. Her name is Lynn Marie Morsky. Have you heard of her? That speaks to kind of your ditch moments. You'd like that. You'd like that podcast and you'd like her. She's super cool too. Okay.
All right. So these things are letting me charge them at the same time. I want to say they'll probably be fine.
You know what? If it's not, if you just put it in there, just say, I'm going to pull up my audio and use my computer audio. That's all part of like the ride of podcasts. People love it. You know, I've done podcasts at cafes before, so it's not really, it's part of the authenticity, if you will, of what we're all doing right now, which is just two women entrepreneurs speaking.
Okay. All right, cool. Then I'll
do you recall where you were?
Yeah, okay. I do.
Awesome.
Let's see how long these work. I know.
Are you in DC or New York or neither?
What's that?
Are you in DC or New York?
DC.
That's, you said capital, and so I just thought, is she in a different capital mall that she's speaking about? Perfect.
Nope, I'm in DC. Okay, so I just ended with grad school, how I get into grad school.
Mm-hmm.
So what's, where?
So you can just launch into, you had a friend out here, you came out to visit, and so you can just pick up with saying, you know, and so after visiting with my friend, I decided, however you want to drop into that.
Okay, perfect. So I had one friend from college in San Diego, and I visited him. I loved it here. I was still concerned about the decision to move 3,000 miles away. It was still challenging for me. So I applied to school, and I applied to San Diego State for graduate school in English literature. Mm-hmm. And I basically set up just a parameter for myself, like if I get in, then I'm supposed to go. That's how, yeah, I kind of managed the decision.
Right.
Because it was such a challenge for me to make that decision. And when I went back for another visit, I spoke to the person who was looking at my applications, and she ended up being the same person who wrote a book with my mentor who had written my recommendation letter. So it was sort of a, wow, very synchronistic thing. And it was interesting too, because I was in the third round. I had gotten moved to the third round of the interviews. So I wasn't supposed to be interviewing with her, and I got pushed. And then the hiring person left, put in a new person, a new chair, and that chair ended up being connected to the woman who wrote my recommendation letter. So when I sat down, she was like, oh, you're in. Like, I wrote a book with this woman, and if she's recommending you, like, I know you're going to be great for the program. So it was all meant to be. That's how I see it, right? So it was very synchronistic. Yeah. word I love. It's a word I use often. Of course, I didn't know it at 23 what any of that meant, but I just knew I was supposed to be there. So
you got your degree, your master's in English literature, and then following that, how long did it take you, and what did you do immediately after you got obtained your master's?
So my master's, I was in school for like the very traditional amount of time. I went to undergrad for 4 years. I did a bunch of summer winter sessions because my dad was like, you know, we're paying for 4 years. We're not doing this like 5 year college thing.
Sure. So yeah,
I knew I had, which was amazing that he took care of all of college for me. And so I was careful about that. So I got done in undergrad in 4 years. I did my graduate degree in 2. I was full-time for both of those degrees. About a year into my master's degree, I started thinking kind of a similar experience as when I decided to move. I had this desire to do something different and bigger, and was curious about what it meant to start a business. And I was 23 at this time, and I was really clear. This is the kind of stupid stuff we do as an entrepreneur when you first start. But like, I knew I never wanted anybody telling me when to wake up in the morning, and I knew I wanted to be in charge of how much money I would make.
Nice.
And those were the two things that were appealing to me. And it wasn't really about making a ton of money. I just wanted to be in control of how, like, I didn't want to be thinking about teaching budgets that I had no control over. Right. So I started a business selling Italian ice, which is a total East Coast product. I was an East Coast girl in a West Coast world.
Right.
And my best friend came to visit me one day, and it was really abnormally hot in San Diego, and she really wanted Italian ice. And she's also, you know, from Delaware. Italian ice is if you don't know, it's a sorbet. Do you know what Italian ice is? Not gelato.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
14 years ago, no one knew what it was.
Right. People think of like what you get at the fair when you say Italian ice, but it's more like a sorbet. I mean, it's more of like more of like a sorbet. Right.
And nobody knew what it was in San Diego. So I was like, of course. And I had just moved there and she was visiting me, and I was like, yeah, let's go find some. And I thought I'd drive down the road, you know, in Pacific Beach, in the beach town, and there'd be 10 of them, but there was none of them. So that was where I was like, oh, this is a great business idea. And again, it's kind of like a typical first time entrepreneur. I was like, oh my God, this is going to be so easy. There's nobody doing it yet. The market's really wide open, and I'll make a shit ton of money, excuse my language. And I'll never have to worry about teaching. Like, I'll only be able to teach because I want to and not because I have to.
Right.
And that was the, because at the core of who I am as a teacher, and that's what I love to do, and that's how I love to be on purpose in this world. And so I started the company, and I walked into US Bank in 2008, right before the crash, when they were just handing out money like it was no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy was a friend of mine, and he thought it was a great idea, and he handed me and my business partner 40 grand and was just like, go have fun. It's a great idea. You're going to be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And we had no business plan. We had never started businesses before. Like, we should have never been given that money. Like, it was one of those days where you look back and you're like, my whole life changed that day. Like, if I had never walked into that bank, my life would look totally different.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started that business, and we started selling Italian ice. We learned how to make Italian ice from my dad. I named it after my dad because he had a deli. He's an old school Italian, like right off the boat. And his family had a deli when he was younger, and they made frozen Italian ice that was all natural with, like, they squeezed the lemons, they made it themselves. So he taught me how to make it. I named it after him. We did a bunch of street fairs and farmers markets. We spent most of the money in responsible ways, but we spent it in ways that we thought we should for the business. And it was a total failure. Nobody cared about Italian ice. Nobody wanted it. Nobody knew what it was.
So really quickly, like, did you have any mentors? Did you find people who had been in similar or like industries and try and get the, it sounds like you took the niche market, which I'm currently obsessed with because I've never even thought about it as farmers markets, as being a niche market that is a great incubator and tester place for feedback and everything else. So it's a great, I mean, I think it's a great place to start with Italian ice. Did you guys have success there?
It is. You're right. I mean, our instincts around the farmer's market was great because farmer's markets are awesome incubators, exactly like what you're saying. Great testing spots because you have a lot of different people that are coming in there. You have a lot of different target markets that you serve in a lot of different spaces that you can test out. You know, Hillcrest in San Diego is very different than Little Italy, which is very different from Ocean Beach. So we were able to test out a ton of different markets at a very low cost. The only problem with Italian ice at a farmer's market is that it's never hot enough. So, like, the climate is not desirable for a product like that.
Okay.
There's no real need for it. And everybody thinks they need to test it first. So you end up sampling, like, you know, on average 7 times before someone makes a purchase. And a purchase is very small for Italian ice. So we would leave there with, you know, down $50 sometimes, you know, or maybe making $50 for all the work and effort we put in, because we were just sampling a bunch, and then we would finally sell a few, and it wouldn't be a lot of money, right? It's just not a high price point.
Yeah. So that business wrapped with a whole bunch of education, painful education. 100%. Behind you.
Painful education. Yeah. But good thing we were clear about it within a year. So we understood the situation and how we were going to pivot really quick. Mm-hmm. And synchronistically, again, one night we had a bunch of Italian ice in my freezer, and we had friends over, and they all put them in red Solo cups. Again, we were like 23 at this time, so red Solo cups was like a thing. Mm-hmm. And we had a dinner party, what we would call it, 23, a dinner party, and we had red Solo cups, and everybody put Italian ice in them and liquor with them. And this was before skinny cocktails was a thing.
Mm-hmm. So they mixed just some booze on top of the Italian ice from your freezer that you had made.
Yes. And they made low calorie frozen cocktails, because our Italian ice was all natural and it was pretty low in calories. So it was delicious. It was really good Italian ice. It was totally natural.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic.
It was great. Everybody loved it. And it was really a good product. But we ended up making frozen cocktails with it. Mm-hmm. And that was another sort of light bulb that went off that was like, oh, yeah, I mean, my girlfriends and I, we all go out for happy hour and we all drink vodka sodas instead of anything else, because we don't want to drink high calorie cocktails. We don't want to drink margaritas that are 700 calories. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing like that on the market. So it was, again, this idea of like, oh my God, I just hit a gold mine. There's totally a space in the marketplace for it. I'm going to make a shit ton of money. I hope that's okay for me to say, because that is really what it sounds like.
Of course.
I'm going to make a shit ton of money, and I'll teach because I have to, not because I want to. I'll teach because I want to, not because I have to. I won't be reliant on that meager salary with a lot of budget cuts. In San Diego, there's a ton of budget cuts, and there's no job security. There was no job security at the time.
Right.
I had pivoted from Italian ice to a cocktail mixer, and sort of with the same intentions again.
Yeah. So you had a new startup all of a sudden, and it was low calorie cocktail mixers, which is, I mean, to date, still one of the largest industries. You know, I mean, everyone always references Bethany Frankel's Skinny Girl. But that was accompanied by a bunch of people doing it at the time. I mean, women had not been addressed by the liquor industry since the beginning of the liquor industry, you know,
it's
and it
really,
was the first turn to it.
Mm-hmm. It's really beautiful because, again, all like, I do believe that in our life we get, and you asked me about mentors, and I'll totally come back to that because it's a huge part of my story, but, you know, universe, God, whatever you want to call it, always provides these sort of lessons and these milestones and these openings to learning stuff and helping you out along the journey. And Bethany Frankel and the Real Housewives, like Bravo, I used to watch Bravo when I would put my product together, like when I was packaging stuff, just to shut my brain off. Like reality TV, it was the only reality TV show I would watch was Housewives and Millionaire Matchmaker on Bravo. And it was total like trashy TV for sure. But it would just be like, okay, I was going 24/7. I was working 3 jobs while I was building the business. I was making no money. I was working 24/7. And I could at the time, I was 24. I did that for about 24/7. And I would watch these shows and I was fascinated by them for 2 reasons. One of them was the marketing that they were doing on it. So Bethany Frankel is the first housewife to launch using that channel. It's the reason she went on the show. She knew she was going to do that. She was brilliant at it. It was all intentional. And I could see it unfolding. And the beautiful thing about this, and I hope I get to tell her this one day, is the night that my product landed on my doorstep. So my first short run, it's called a short run of my first run of the product, is 52 cases of the first run of product I'd ever done. landed on my doorstep the night that the Housewives had a reunion show where she explained that concept for the first time. So the night she launched that product was the same night that it landed on my doorstep.
Auspicious.
So it was interesting because it was an indicator to me like that I was on the right track. And there was, as you said, 12 other people doing it. So she launched that product and it became easier to do it in the marketplace because she was doing all the marketing for it.
Yeah.
So a lot of people in these interviews will interview me about her. She always comes up and they're always like, did you like hate her because she like took your, I'm like, no, first of all, that's not a thing. Like,
no,
none of us took our ideas. Like there's a million ideas out there and it can all work together and there's room and space for everyone in the marketplace. But she educated the whole to a bar and all of a sudden the manager would listen to me because of what she was doing.
Well, and more than that, like I always tell people when they talk about competitive, and this is truer in Europe sometimes than it is here, but intellectual property, people get very like, oh, don't put it out there yet when you have a startup, don't do this, don't do that. And I always tell people, listen, you know, when Google came along, there was no need for Google. That industry was covered by Netscape and, you know, a handful of other silly little search engines. And the reason why Google became Google is because they did it better. So, and especially in our American society and economy, we are built on this, like, if it's the same, does it work better or how is it unique? And so anytime someone's like, well, that already exists, it's like, yeah, there's one. It's Bethany Frankel, you know, and she got bought out by a larger liquor label. And I think that the quality changed and there's just so much room for boutique labels, especially the liquor industry is so huge for, you know, for anyone to think that one little person, and not little, she's a mogul. And I actually like her brain like you because she was on Martha Stewart's Apprentice before that to do the exact same thing. She wanted to be this natural foods chef slash whatever. The skinny girl margarita thing actually came up on New York Housewives with, you know, her conversation with someone with how she ordered her drinks. She wanted to be involved in the, you know, the nutrition and health industry in some way. And I just think that anyone who's determined like that, she's the example of manifestation, but also that in the industry that is, women are just constantly told, I just interviewed Kate Nolan, who started an athletic apparel line. She wrote a book and it's called Grit by Grace. And in it, she talks about how she does this athletic apparel. And there was a VC that said, is there really enough room for another set of leggings in the industry? And I thought, what a dim-witted little dude. Like, yeah, there is. Oh. There's room for another pair of leggings if they're rad. You know, it's just like VCs who, or anyone who speaks like that with a lack of an imagination. So I think that industry, even though you've moved on from it, I think it's still burgeoning. I would describe that as in its infancy stage, as far as dealing with low-cal cocktail mixers, there aren't enough.
Yeah.
So go on. So you were, I just hijacked your moment. So you were speaking to people, you were glad that she existed. You've done interviews where you spoke to that. So what happened with like towards the end of that, how far did you get in the launch with that?
Yeah. So I launched it. So I went from street fairs and farmers markets and then bars and restaurants with mixers. It was called Bear Mixers. It was originally SoCal Local. And then we rebranded to Bear Mixers. So I went through the whole marketing rebranding phase, which is a crazy process. And you learn so much, you know, doing that process. And one of the things I take companies, you know, brands, products and things through now, because I did it so much with that product. Like we rebranded a bunch of times. So, as you normally do, right? So I rebranded, I sold to street fairs and bars and restaurants in San Diego, got a distributor, and then ended up getting a buyer. We had a couple different buyers that were interested. And the one that finally stuck was in 2014. I sold the company, about 8 years after I started the Claudio's Italian Ice to a leading health foods company in LA. And it's a much longer story, but the highlight of the story is basically like, I woke up one day, I was doing three jobs and I wasn't making enough money. Like I didn't have enough runway to go after big accounts. Because one of the things that you learn as someone that's selling a product is, and this is the biggest lesson I learned. One of the biggest lessons I learned is like small businesses fail because they grow too fast. So if you don't have enough money to buy products to fulfill orders and wait until you get paid for those purchase orders, which could be 30, 60, 90 days, depending on the industry, you get stuck. And I had US Foods, which is a multi-billion dollar, I think, well, they were bought by Cisco and they got in the same year they were interested, but they were interested in the brand. They didn't end up purchasing, it didn't end up all working out, but they were interested in it. And there was no way I could have supported that order because they would have ordered 6,000 gallons of product and I would have needed 30 grand to pay for it. Like, there's just no way I could have done it.
Yeah.
So I ended up getting people to help me with purchase orders, investor-like people. And then I woke up one day and I had turned 30. My boyfriend and I had broken up and all three of my jobs that I was doing fell through. And it was just a huge awakening moment where I was like on my knees, just 104 pounds, had no life, no boyfriend. My business was failing. And I was just like, I need to sell. I need to put this in hands of people that can really put the resources behind it. And I'll be the face of the brand and I'll still push it forward, but I need to sell.
Okay.
And two of my mentors, I had four really, really instrumental mentors who are still in my life. My first one was through SCORE. So he was a free supportive mentor through the company called SCORE, which everybody can use. They're in every city, SCORE.
So this is like a mentor assignership. I haven't heard of it, of SCORE.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We walked into this building, somehow found out about it, and he was there. Pat Stewart, what's his name?
And it's just called SCORE, and it's people that assign you mentors in your like field to kind of keep you on track as startups.
Yeah, and they help business with a bunch of stuff. But that's nice. That's what we got out of SCORE.
Okay.
And Pat Stewart was hugely instrumental, and then Stephen Cox, who is a really successful entrepreneur in San Diego, a really good friend of mine. He was a mentor of mine, still is to this day. I talked to him 2 weeks ago about a deal, briefly, and then. My two mentors that helped me sell the company, Max Holmes, who you won't find anywhere because he's super private, Max. But he helped me open my deal, and then Cheryl, Max, yeah, you won't find him anywhere. He's one of my most favorite people too. And then, so he helped me open my deal, and Cheryl Edison, who is an incredible entrepreneur, and you can find her online too. She's, she helped me close it and has been in my life for 10 years and talks.
So they helped you find a buyer.
They helped me find a buyer and close my deal. So one helped me sell and one helped me close my deal. And this was my baby, like Bear Mixers was my baby. So it was really, I think this is true. I say this because it's probably something all entrepreneurs go through with their first business, their first product. Like, you're so attached to it. You know, you build it, you grow it, you're up with it all night long. Like, it's like a baby. It really feels that way, to what I can imagine. And it was really emotional to sell it. Mm-hmm. So I needed help closing the deal because there was a lot of emotion attached to it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. To take advisor. I mean, any step, I always say along the way, like, it doesn't matter if you're just starting up a QuickBooks account, I advise to get a mentor. You know, it's so much faster. And it happens so much more fluidly. And I can't speak enough to the idea of mentorship. Or as Amy Chang, who I interviewed a couple of weeks ago, she said, career advocate. She believes it goes a step further than mentorship, you know, that it goes into career advocacy. And I like that as well. I think that someone getting really involved on your level. And it's also the completion of the cycle, you know, as a young entrepreneur and now versus the seasoned one that I've kind of grown into, mentoring is, I consider it to be a gift to myself. You know, it's giving it back is exactly what you want to do. I believe as an entrepreneur, it comes very naturally. I've heard a lot of people say they're a little shy about talking to people about being a mentor. And I'm like, it's an open dialogue and it should be, you know, this is part of our industry. So you closed up Bear Organic Mixers in 2015, and then I'd love to know like what you launched into after that. Did you take some time and go to a beach in Tahiti, or did you just launch straight into your next like endeavor?
I did take some time. I mean, I didn't make a ton of money or, you know, whatever. So I successfully sold the company and did not have like a ton to sit on and also like take up. But I did take some time. I moved to LA because the company that bought the company was in LA. So I had moved to LA already and I lived there and I did some creative work. I was dating somebody who was really creatively talented and had brought a lot of that out in me again. So I did a lot of writing while I was there, and I sort of figured out that I wanted to get back to teaching. And I have to say, like, the business and the men in my life have been like the biggest have been my biggest teachers.
Okay, how so?
Well, I mean, my ex that we broke up when I was 30 was all very incredible humans in their own right, and he helped me, you know, stay sort of sane and stable through that business phase. And then when we broke up, it launched me into this sort of personal development rabbit hole that I would have never gone down had I not been heartbroken, you know? And the breakup was, he initiated it, but it was me that had sort of led that, you know, because I was an entrepreneur, I was a working woman who was thinking, like, if I can just get all of this done, then I can settle and be in this relationship and be present. But I wasn't present. I was working all the time. I was like that typical sort of entrepreneur story, this female story that we kind of all struggle, you know, that we have struggles with, women in our 30s. And at that time I was like mid 20s. But so I learned that lesson. I learned how to be more feminine. I learned how to let men lead. I learned that you have to be present and how to be present. I learned how important it is to be present. I learned how important it is to be balanced, you know, like in that loss. So
after you did some kind of meditation, it sounds like, on your, took stock of your life in Los Angeles after selling Bear Organic Mixtures in 2015, how quickly until you launched into, at least right now, you're teaching again and you're an independent coach. Like, what was that transition like?
Yeah, so I lived in LA for a year, and then I decided to go back to San Diego because that's where like my teaching contacts were, and that's I had taught for a little while at San Diego State, and I had a mentor there, Dr. Mauricio, who I knew was like a big supporter of me getting back into teaching. So I went back to the city I was comfortable in, that I was, you know, loved. I went back to San Diego. LA felt really scary for me. It felt really big. It felt like I didn't know how to like kind of do a lot there. And I look back on that now and know that was ridiculous too. But at the time I was like very fearful in the city. I used to call it the land of the deliberate dreamers. Everybody's pounding the pavement towards their dreams, and all the people I was around doing it deliberately. It was really inspiring, but it was very scary at the time. And so I went back to San Diego, and I sat for about 90 days. I read this book called The Success Principles by Jack Canfield, who's the same guy that wrote Chicken Soup for the Soul. Mm-hmm. I meditated. I was in another mentor of mine. I have like a life mentor. Her name is Mika. She had a condo that she let me stay in. And I just sat there, and I was really quiet for about 90 days. I was quiet for about 3 months. And I read that book, and I did this exercise in there called, it was a SMART goal exercise that he recommends. And this is part of the stuff that I teach now. And I wrote on this note card, by September 2016, I will do what I love to do every day, and I will feel happy and purposeful. And I attached a number to it that I wanted to make that I had never touched before. And I read that every morning and every night, and I meditated on it, and I just did the spiritual stuff. I did yoga. I did meditation. I was quiet. I didn't date for three, you know, I didn't go out on any dates. Like, I just kept it really simple. Mm-hmm. And within 90 days, because of that teacher, he helped me. I told him I really wanted to get back into the classroom. And within 90 days, I had a class offered to me at UCSD teaching a course called The Pursuit of Happiness.
Nice. Auspiciously, like fortuitously placed and titled, no?
It was super synchronistic. I mean, because one of the things that the guy that I was dating in LA said to me is, like, you just have to get like to your true north. Like, just do what makes you happy. And I was like, well, that's teaching. Like, I know that. That's really what I am, who I am at the core. Mm-hmm. And so the class was named, the theme was The Pursuit of Happiness. It was all very like oh, okay, perfect. This is perfect. And my students love that story. I always tell them that story and they're like, oh, this is like amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And manifesting it that way. I mean, I think that there are a lot of different ways that people can come to it, but it's definitely not the first time I've had a dialogue with a serious and serial entrepreneur, you know, male or female, that get into kind of this manifestation, you know, role, whether or not you come through it through meditation or other, you know, Tony Robbins, or I mean the cast of Billions, you know, the hit show on TV right now, they show them meditating, these, you know, billionaires. And I think it's because that kind of manifestation or bringing from what is in the subconscious and the truly desired into reality is crucial with the entrepreneurial spirit at any rate.
100%.
Yeah. I think that you knowing all along that you your true happiness was really in teaching is also an incredible gift, because a lot of people struggle with just trying to define what it is they want, that they truly love and want. That's like the first step, you know, and it can take people years.
People say that to me all the time, like, you're so blessed that you know what your purpose is since you were five. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I can be in front of any classroom and it makes sense. It's just, I can... just like, okay, these are the students. This is what needs to be done. This is the curriculum. Like, it's, and coaching is teaching. I mean, it's the same.
Right. I was just going to say it ties in.
It's all the same. Yeah. And consulting is the same thing. It's really just, you're using a different word depending on the audience that's in front of you.
So let's climb into that. Let's talk about your independent coaching and what you do with companies and building their teams and their strategy, all of that.
So I guess I sold the company. I started doing all this personal development work, have incredible mentors that have taught me a lot of things, a lot of lessons, a lot of strategy. And so I started coaching. It's funny because the coaching that I started doing was all dating coaching. It was male, female communication and how to date. You know, the evolution of like coaching is so funny, because when you decide that you want to go like, okay, this is the curriculum or this is the content that I want to teach and these are the people I want to teach it to, and then you step into that, all this stuff comes up. Like, mm-hmm. This is what I say to, because creative entrepreneurs come up to me all the time and say like, I want to launch my brand, and but they're scared to do it or they don't know how to do it. And these are the types of people like one-on-one that I deal with the most. Not in the company space, but when I talk to one-on-one people, it's typically a creative entrepreneur with a really cool gift service, and they just don't know how to pitch it. They don't know how to brand themselves and they're scared to do it. Mm-hmm. And the first question they say to me is like, what gives me the right to teach any of this content? What gives me the right to get paid to tell people how to do this stuff? Right? Because I'm not perfect and my life isn't all perfect. And so what gives me the right? And I always like clap my hands and say like, that's exactly perfect. That's exactly where you're meant to be. Because people that come into, this is my experience of it, is people that are stepping into their purpose and they're stepping into a position where they're giving advice, or they're getting exercises and steps and they're teaching the lessons they've learned. They have to come to terms with the fact that they're ready to do it and that they're qualified to do it. Mm-hmm. And this is the issue with coaching, right? Because we don't have like degrees, right? So you come up against that a lot too. You go like, okay, well, and I thought about that on three different occasions. I almost went back to get my marriage family therapy degree, just so I'd have a degree behind my name. And what I came to, after you study the coaching space and the big names in the space and the people that are just crushing it and making huge impact on the world, the Tony Robbins, the Gabby Bernstein's, the Marianne Williamson's, the Marie Forleo's, like the big names in the spaces and what they're doing. They've just spent the time and energy and the lessons, the experience to be able to be two or three, or in some cases, 20 steps ahead of their students. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing I came to. I'm like, as long as you are three, I go like three or four steps in front of the person that's coming to you for assistance, for coaching, for consulting, you're in good shape, because you're taking them from generally like people that come to me are in what I call like a ditch moment. So they're in like a dark, deep moment in their life. I call it a ditch moment. They don't have any idea how they're going to get out of it. They don't know how far down they are. It's friggin' dark and it's deep and it's scary and they just don't know what to do. And they come to me and I am the person that's stepping, I'm helping them step out of the ditch. That tends to be what it looks like for me with my current clients, one-on-one stuff. It's different, a little different with business stuff, but like one-on-one clients, that's what it looks like.
Okay. And so do you also do like the personal coaching? It sounds like you kind of, those two worlds blur, like it becomes a business and a personal endeavor as well.
Yeah, perfect. It's totally, it's, and it all connects. So what you do in one area of your life, you do in all areas of your life. So people generally come to me, like in the simplest of terms, the way I describe it, people will come to me and they'll say, I'm stuck here. This is where I'm stuck. And this is where I want to go. And I say to them, okay, how did you get here? Because you've been here before. This is a pattern. This is a trigger. This is a stuck point. It's based on some kind of life rule that you have, some kind of life lens that you're looking at life through based on some core stuff that happened to you between 0 and 8. So it's, how did you get to this point? Where do you want to go? And what's the most efficient and effective way to get you from point A to point B? And I do that for people in academic settings. I do this with my students in that writing course. That's what they're doing. They're all there in the writing happiness course to, you know, complete a certain set of accomplishments in 10 weeks. And they're all stuck. They don't know how to do that. So I help them get from point B. I do this one-on-one with people. My people that come to me are generally creative entrepreneurs. And then I do this in businesses. So I have 2 clients right now that need help with team dynamic stuff. And they're conscious leaders and they know that they're stuck. And they know that they're sort of at the core. And if they can get some of their own personal ways of doing business and life cleaned up, then it's going to make an impact for their team and the globe, right? Because it works from inside and then your group and then the whole.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's kind of the way it all works. And so I work with conscious leaders about conscious communication, conscious reflection, and conscious creation.
Okay. And then... what do you see for this, both the teaching and in combination with this coaching and everything, what did you, as your personal businesses incorporating all of those aspects, what do you think the next 1 to 3 years look like as far as scaling or envisioning new projects or whatever for you?
So it's a great question. So I intend to continue to teach because I love being in that setting, right? So UCSD is an incredible school to teach at. I'm at Warren College. They're incredible people there. All the teachers I work with are great, inspiring people. So I love teaching in that space as well. But I'd also like to do some of my conscious, so I just did a speech in May on conscious conversations and conscious communication for HR people. So I'd love to start doing more of that with working with corporate and helping people in the corporate setting on just some of these basic things. Like how do we consciously communicate so we can create authentic, genuine, win-win situations for everybody, for everyone involved.
Yeah.
And again, there's a certain set of like exercises and skills that I teach on that front. So the conscious conversations, conscious communication, conscious reflection within the corporate space, is really fun for me. And I love doing that. And then I also have, some retreats that I'd like to put on and I work on currently, creating, spaces for people to come and to have mind body alignment and the type of things that you typically hear about in retreats. It's not anything unique that I'm talking about. It's just, right. I'm working on putting some thought leaders together to do some of those things as well. Raising consciousness it's a trend right now, right? It's the wellness industry is a $4.2 trillion industry right now. There's a huge marketplace for it. And people are committed to it now. They're committed to being, everybody's so connected to their phones and so connected to screens and so connected to looking at life through that lens. And they're also aware that it's not healthy and that we need to make some shifts so that we can raise consciousness and come to the table with more conscious ways.
Yeah. I think that companies as well are really interested in the exact same thing. I think it's become more corporate, you know, especially when people look at the metrics of, you know, how well employees are and how connected from the right person being assigned with the right tasks all the way through to, you know, the health and their personal work-life balance, that type of thing. Retreats are definitely, from what I've seen, on the rise from corporate to boutique, you know, companies. So that sounds like an exciting, like, third area.
It's a thing that I've put on day things with other, you know, day short retreat situations I've done with other brilliant people in my life. I'm surrounded by a ton of spiritual healers and coaches of all kinds, and we like to put those kinds of things together. But certainly the bigger vision would be to create something that's more often than I'm doing in my life and helping a larger group of people. But it's you know, right now it looks like one-on-one stuff and the teaching and corporate.
Which is nice. So if someone was starting out, one of the final pieces to the podcast is advice that you would have if you ran into a young female entrepreneur, you know, just coming out of her grad degree with a writing background, English lit, what would you advise her? She said, yeah, you know, I'm thinking about doing a startup. I think this is going to be great. I'm 23 years old, got a bunch of buddies, and we're headed to the bank. What would be this kind of thing? What would be your greatest pieces of advice for her?
Speaking to myself at 23. Number one, the first piece of advice I would say is get a mentor for sure, 100%. They'll do like what Tony Robbins says. They'll decompress decades into days for you. So number one, absolutely find a mentor. Number two, only do a thing you're passionate about. Don't ever do anything creating a product or service that you are not really passionate about the first time around, because it is your baby and it is going to take over your life. It's 24/7. It takes all of your resources, your time and your energy, and you better be madly in love with it. It is your baby. It's your first priority. It will get in the way of relationships. This is, of course, you know, this is my lenses or only my experiences, but you better do something that you're on purpose about. And at the end of the day, I did not care about cocktail mixers. Like, that's one of the things. I woke up one day and I was like, I don't care about cocktail mixers anymore. I did.
Right.
I loved but for me, it was about creating a space for women to connect and not worry about the calories they were taking in. And I don't even worry about calories, honestly. Like, I don't actually think about it that often. I just knew it was a thing for people. Mm-hmm. And I thought there was a space in the market for it. And I loved the idea of creating that space for women who were not going to worry and only have fun. That was the core of what Bear Mixers was. And when I woke up one day and I was like, do you really want to talk about cocktail mixers and sodium benzoate and calories and cocktails? No, I don't. I don't care. I don't care. And that's kind of what the inner voice in me sounded like. And it was screaming at me by the time I sold the company. And so I tell everybody that now. Do a thing you're passionate about. Pick a product that you're happy to talk about 24/7 and live, breathe, and eat. And if you don't feel that way, do not do it. Pick something else. Find the thing that you're passionate about. For your first company, once you get the way it is, like once you get what it is to run a company under your belt, you can do things in other industries. It doesn't have to be something you're super duper passionate about because you figured it out already.
Right.
The third thing I would say is this entrepreneur grind stuff is kind of bullshit. It's this like, and being in a man's world, right? That's a sort of language that men use that feels really good to them, and we sort of, I think as women, feel like we have to do that as well or speak that way as well, or I certainly did. But it's not real. Use your intuition. Use your female power, empowered self. Be feminine. Like, use those things because we have them for a reason, and they're valuable. And grinding is bullshit. You need to stay balanced. Mm-hmm. You need to find 10 minutes to meditate. You need to make sure that you're sleeping 6 or 7 hours, 8 ideally, which I never do. You need to find the balance because when you're balanced and you're tapped in to source and your intuition and you meditate, you're going to get things done faster.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And more efficiently.
Yeah. So you will be more efficient and effective if you create balance. And if you just grind and read those stupid Instagram posts about how you're supposed to grind it out as an entrepreneur, it will take you longer and you will beat your body up and you will not be happy in your life. That's what I mean. This is again, all my experience, but I like killed myself. Grinding.
Yeah. I love that you said that because it is like, it's a message that I'm passionate about starting. Like, I'm starting a cult. I'm starting a clan. I don't believe in, and Melinda Gates doesn't know it yet, but she's on my team because there is this idea. We have this old school, I think it started with the launch of Google and Facebook and all of that, but, and it's also male centric, it's white male centric, and it's also ageist. You got to be 20 years old, skinny, white, hunched over a laptop with a hoodie on, and you got to work 20 hour days and live off top ramen. And it's the anti human goal. And anyone who is in the entrepreneurial game, no matter who it is, you know, doesn't usually look like that. And we'll still kind of try to acclimate to the whole, like, no, I'm killing myself, I'm starving. And it's like, well, that's not creating anything beautiful. You know, that's not, the very few people can produce anything that I would consider lovely out of those conditions. I just think that it's so, it's opposite of what we actually want from our entrepreneurs to describe that kind of a lifestyle, you know, style. And I think it comes from the starving artists in the 1800s and yada, yada, yada. But I just don't subscribe to it. I think you and I should start this new revolution.
I would love that. And it's really important too. And I think the thing I learned from all that too is coming from a love place versus a fear-based place. So it's like when you're not feeding your body, when you have no self-care, and you have no money, you're coming from a fear-based place of lack. And so it's really, really, really hard to create and build from that space. As soon as I got back on purpose, my salary went up by 3 times. Like, I tripled my salary as soon as I started doing what I love to do, because I was coming from a different energetic space. And so that might be that's a whole different conversation, but all fear versus love, energy, manifesting. That's all the stuff I talk about. It's all the stuff I do now. It's all the stuff I teach now. And it's very simple. Like, that, those concepts are simple. All the people in over thousands of years say the same things about our energy, what we believe we create, what we say, you know, and really, like, what I would leave people with is, like, just get your thoughts, your speaking, and your feelings in alignment. Like, meditate 10 minutes a day and get really clear, and then speak and think and feel all the same thing, and you will energetically manifest it and create it much faster, because we are just like energy bubbles walking around everywhere all the time.
Absolutely.
There's science behind that. It's not just woo-woo spiritual bullshit. Like, there's a lot of science.
Yeah, even more so every day too. So I usually wrap up with asking everybody, what's your most favorite thing that you're going to do today? And as well as, today is Saturday, so let's say starting Monday next week, what's your favorite thing that you are looking forward to doing today, as well as, beginning next week, beginning on Monday?
Oh, that's a beautiful question. So what my thing I'm most looking forward to today is, actually, I do have I know this is going to sound really silly, but I do have a meditation that I'm doing right now. It's Joe Dispenza, who I'm going to a seminar in September. He brings the science to the spirituality, and I'm really into a meditation. It makes me feel great. It gets me centered. So I'm looking forward to doing that. And then on Monday, you know, I can't really speak about it a ton, which is why I'm a little faltered on the retreat conversation that you asked me about, but I'm building something right now. That I'm doing all the market research on, and all the, so I'm back to a space where I'm building something new with a lot of cool potential that I unfortunately can't really speak on yet. So send me good juju, and hopefully one day I'll be able to talk to you about it. Yeah. But I'm back to the competitive analysis research of a marketplace that's really exciting. So I'm excited to get back to all of the research on possibility, like, and see what's possible in a possible potential thing.
Nice. Yeah, I like that. That's great.
I just want to call that out. Like, I'm super clear that I'm a little rocky on saying, like, what's up next, but I'm in a space where it's like, it's all unfolding and it's all manifesting perfectly, but it's unknown. It's uncertain right now, which is a beautiful space to be in.
It is. It's an exciting one too. I'm excited for you. I will send you all of my positive energy and that from this podcast.
Thank you. Please do that.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to meet with us today, Natalie. I know that you're a busy, busy person, and I'm so glad that you made the time to speak with the podcast series. I really appreciate it.
Oh my God. Of course. This was beautiful. Thank you.
Absolutely. To everyone listening, thank you so much for checking in, and remember to always bet on yourself. Until I talk to you next time, Slentia.